Hello, this is Mariah Joy, and I am here on the line with Zet Harber, who is a master storyteller. And she has so graciously offered to come on and share with us some of her wisdom around story and storytelling so that we can weave that into our practice of setting limits peacefully with our children. So just a few words about how I see story weaving into this practice of creating our family culture, really based on our foundation of our own unique family values. Story is just one of the tools, one of the many tools that we have of really deepening the understanding of what our values are and how we live by those values. And it's super unique to each of us and to our families. And it's a beautiful way through story to really connect this on a deeper understanding level for our children, rather than just saying, you know, in our family we value kindness. So the child might hear those words, but we really want to give them a felt sense of what that means. How do we live a value of kindness? And so what I always have people do is take one value at a time to really be deeply exploring before we introduce another one. And one of the ways that we're exploring it is just by really illuminating all of the places that we can find that value being displayed or being lived out, carried out in our everyday life. That happens through story, especially with our young children that we are reading stories to or telling stories to. We have ample opportunities to kind of pause and explore what just happened in the story between a couple characters, or between how the characters are walking their path through life and what that looks like. So anytime that you see, I'll stay with the example of kindness, anytime you see characters being in the world in a kind way, we can pause and stop and just enjoy that moment and really say, not so much moralizing that, but just exploring it with our children and exploring further how it might feel to be those characters. Same thing when we're out and about in the world and somebody does something that is really kind for us. It could be as simple as holding the door open. Just taking a quick moment to mention it to our children and saying, that was so kind of that gentleman to hold the door open for us. I really appreciated that. It made me feel cared for. So story is a very, very rich tool that we can dive into in more depth, and I'm very happy to welcome Zet on. Thank you, Zet, for taking this time out and coming to have this conversation with me today around story and how that really intersects with this work we're doing here, to set limits peacefully based on our foundation of family values. So hello, will you share with us just a few words about yourself and what you're up to in terms of storytelling work in the world?
Sure. Thanks so much, Mariah. I am really excited, actually, to talk about story and explore that whole area as it applies to this idea of setting limits peacefully. It's a wonderful partnership. Right now, my work with story is in a few directions. One direction is a few years ago, I founded a storytelling festival in our area called the Peace Love Story Fest, and we have our third annual Peace Love Story Fest coming up on in May, and we're very excited. Mm-hmm. We have four local storytellers and a local musical group called Shadowlands, and we're all going to be able to enjoy a beautiful environment outdoors at Los Osos Valley Nursery and enjoy story and family and community and outdoors. So it was a wonderful culmination. And then another part of my work is called The Listening Circle. And this is a gathering for women in which we connect to ourselves and to each other and to story in a really cozy and relaxed environment. And so we get to explore the reflections that the stories have for us that are unique to each one of us. So I'm very excited about that work. And then I also do, you know, consulting either for individuals or businesses, organizations, on what is their story and how are they able to share that story in a way that's inspiring and impactful and really lets the community know what they're about.
So wonderful. That's great. I love it all. Thank you. So I would love to start by just taking a few moments to look back in history and see how story has really been with us through all the ages of humankind. And I would love to see what you have to say about that.
Well, you know, I have actually tried to research, you know, what's the beginning of story in human experience. And because story is an oral tradition, originally nothing was written down. And as communities, as parents, we would pass on the stories that we felt were important to our children. And that's how we shared values and information and wisdom, you know, was just through word of mouth. Typically, when you look at just even from an archaeological aspect, the general feeling is that stories were a way of helping people, particularly the males of the community, be better hunters because they would tell stories of their hunt, where they found the animals, how they found them. When I imagine story, though, the very first story, when I imagine that, I see a mother looking into the face of her baby and her toddler. Through my own experience as a mother, I think, to be honest, the very first story would have been from the mother to the child. And we have no way to, you know, officially document that. But I think as moms, we all have had that experience. I mean, what's the best way for us to share a story, you share information with our newborn, with our toddler who's currently exploring, you know, when I touched that plant, it was very, you know, it stung me and that was very painful. So that's a story that you're telling that young child about the stinging nettle. That communicates to them that, oh, that's an experience that person had. And by doing it with a story, you actually allow the child to decide, well, am I going to have that experience myself, or am I going to just learn from the story that I've just been given?
Yeah, I love that. That is such a good point, because we are we're leaving it open. There's some openness for them to really decide. And when we talk about setting limits peacefully, one thing that we talk about is that it's not the end of the conversation. So when we're really operating out of the dominant paradigm, we're going to say, you know, my way is the way it goes. My word's the word. And when we're operating out of a partnership with paradigm, we're really looking at setting limits as the beginning of a conversation. And so it's not the end of the story, it's the beginning of the story. And the beginning of an exploration together. So I like that we can share a story in this way to really try to help guide our children and teach them something about the world and something that maybe we learn the hard way. And then they really get to choose. They get to choose if they want that experience, like you said.
Go ahead. Currently, too, we're getting some really good affirmation from neuroscience. And it's demonstrating the evidence that when we are hearing a story, the places in our brain that are lighting up are the same ones that would light up if we were in that situation. We don't have to be in that situation just to experience similar emotions and similar perspectives. And so we are giving the child an opportunity to safely pre-experience challenging situations. And when it's peaceful parenting, you know, then you have the opportunity to ask them lots of questions. You know, how does that feel when you yeah, when you hear about that character, what did you feel like? Because they are having those feelings and those thoughts as if they were in the situation.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, can you say more about that? I know that you and I have chatted about that offline before, about this idea of when we've been telling a story and then we're really in the, we're exploring it further, how do we have that dialogue with them about the story that they just heard? That yes, and so you're pulling out of them what they heard and then adding to it. And so you're exploring it together.
Absolutely. That yes, and is a great concept that I read about in Tina Fey's autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And she was describing how in improv, the rule is that when you're on stage with another person, your response must always begin with yes, and. So no matter what they improv, there's a banana on the floor, you can't say, well, no, that's not a banana, that's a possum, you know, you can't shift it. Your job is to say yes, and da-da-da. And so it creates a really interesting climate where people's creativity is really fueled. Same concept really applies beautifully to parenting. And storytelling can be the practice ground for that yes and. So if you have a culture of sharing story in your family, then the more you engage in sharing story as a family, the more you'll be able to draw on it when it really is a situation where it's more, say, important or more critical that your child be able to be open with you and share concerns and questions. So you want to practice the story part in the easy times when it's not really about anything big, so that when you hit perhaps those teen years where the challenges are a little more serious, you have a culture of story where your teen understands that we're going to explore through story. That the parent, as a parent, I ask questions of you. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. And then the child has experienced over the years that my response as a parent to them has been yes, and. I think it's probably for many parents, a scary place to be because you're not in control, or you don't have the illusion of being in control. But one of the images that I've really loved through the years is to view life as an experiment, a scientific experiment. So when I go into the lab and I'm going to create an experiment, I'm going to get an outcome. I'm going to get results. And I'm going to look at those results and say, what did I learn from that result? And what do I need to change if I want to get a different result? And that takes, you know, the any sort of shame or blame out of what happens. And again, I think, you know, it's just a habit that needs to be created one step at a time, you know. But when I do live life as an experiment and transfer that concept to my children, you know, then we can talk about things without the outcome necessarily being bad or good. It's, oh, what did you observe there? Ah, yeah, I see how that felt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when we're really talking about creating family culture, so in this process that we're working through really identifying what our family values are. And then that can be, hopefully it is a heart-based process, but it can also be kind of heady at first. And then we want to take it a little bit deeper out of the intellect and into like a very rich felt sense. And especially when we're trying to build this family culture in a way that our children can really live into it, that's where I see story coming in so strongly to help us out. So we've kind of identified and maybe made lists of what our values are and made lists of how we're currently living in alignment with those, or maybe we're not, and we've identified where we're not. And then how do we go about bringing our children into the fold? And for the young child, being able to create images for them to live into rather than words to memorize, it goes so much further for them. They really connect to a bigger picture that they can feel with their heart and smell with their nose and see with their eyes. And you can achieve all of that through story.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. What are your thoughts on how we can use story and connecting really on a heart level that that the child feels with all of their senses rather than just hearing and trying to conceptualize in their intellectual mind?
You know, for me, it goes back to the idea of living metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
When I grew up, I was born in the early 60s, and during the 60s and even the early 70s, I was given a very clear set of rules and dogma that mm-hmm. I was told were the guidelines for, you know, living an appropriate, a good life.
Right.
It did not encourage me to ask questions or think metaphorically or consider the idea of life as an experiment. And
right.
When I became a storyteller about 22 years ago, it opened a whole new world to me that when we are conditioned or practiced in the art of thinking metaphorically, we have the ability to have such a more enriched inner life. And
yeah.
as the inner life is enriched, so the outer life will be enriched.
Mm-hmm.
So as a parent who may have not been raised to think in terms of metaphor, mm-hmm. you know, I'd say kind of start just looking at that question for yourself. What would that mean to live as metaphor? And one of the ways we can connect to it as an adult is, you know, if you have a favorite character in a movie or a novel,
mm-hmm.
or even if you're a fan of folklore like I am, there are, you know, many rich characters there that offer themselves as a metaphor. Just for an example, one of my favorite stories is Rumpelstiltskin, and I think
mm-hmm.
you know, most Americans have come across that story throughout
mm-hmm.
their lives. The metaphor that that story offers me is this beautiful one of, first of all, spinning straw into gold.
Yeah.
The straw is just the stuff of our everyday life. We don't really think it's a whole big, very big deal, right? It's not shiny. It's not pretty. We can't eat it, can't wear it. What good is it? And yet, you know, if you go through a day, you probably feel like you've probably gotten a lot of straw. And yet in the story, this magical character who appears when the miller's daughter is crying can spin this straw into gold. And to mm-hmm. me, that is the heart and soul of story. Story is the thing that enables us to take the straw of ordinary life and spin it into gold within
wow.
ourselves and for each other. Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. How would you share that metaphorical thinking with your children? How would you share that kind of a metaphor that you see in that? How would you illustrate that for your children?
Yeah, to be honest, I wouldn't really point it out for many years. I think the path that offers sort of the most richness is that if we simply engage in story with our children and with ourselves, really, over time, these things just unfold. And so rather than looking for maybe a direct interpretation of what meaning a story may have for us, I think that over time, if the story stays in your family, that there can be an exploration with questions rather than a teaching of information.
Yeah.
It's challenging. Yeah. It's really hard because the most fun thing can be to say, Do you know what that story means? Let me tell you. Never go into the woods without your parents, right?
Right.
And I think that what I have observed with my own children and with the children that I've worked with through the years is that their observations are always so much richer if I really step aside. And it's a little bit humbling, you know, and I think that that's a challenge for me as an adult is, ooh, I need to take a back seat here to the wisdom of the children. But I've learned so very much when I do. And that was one of the things I wanted to kind of touch on, too, with our talk is that having a story practice or a storytelling practice within your family really calls on each of us to be comfortable with vulnerability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because when I tell a story, I have told stories for 22 years, and many of them I have told throughout the 22 years. I have stories I have probably told 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I tell it as if it's brand new for me, because I'm opening myself to the experience that that story has for me in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
If I did not do that, the story, the audience would just unconsciously know that I was, that the story was not brand new for me, and that I already, your body gives away the ending and things like that, and so the audience doesn't get to enjoy it. But so with children, the same kind of thing. Children are so vulnerable, and I think on some level they're deeply aware of this.
Yeah.
And so if I am willing to be vulnerable in the sense of, let's enter this story together and see what we find. And I'm going to look to you, child, for as much insight as I might have myself, because we're both explorers in this new land together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would do it.
I love that. Yeah, we really open it up for them to be creating and to continue creating in their own mind and kind of developing their relationship with that story. And what I have found is if we kind of put our end cap on it by saying what it means to us or what the lesson is, it's almost as if we shortchange that whole process. I know from my years of teaching in the Waldorf classroom that we do a lot through story, and the story will be told day after day after day. Oftentimes at the end, there will be a puppet show. You know, it's sort of, it would morph from oral storytelling into then a puppet show, and then maybe at the end of a week or even two of telling the same story, the children would then be able to act it out. And so we allow a lot of time for the same story to seep in, but we don't go back and summarize or moralize. We just really let it live inside of them. And it is a piece that they draw on. I'm always surprised that, you know, years later, my kids will come back and share a little bit of the stories that they learned. And they have such a special relationship with those characters. And it's not always what I took away from the story. So allowing them to have their own experience. Bruce story, I love that you're sharing that and seeing what they can teach you through it, too.
Absolutely. What a beautiful tradition the Waldorf one is. I knew they involved story, but I had no idea that it was that repetitive kind of immersion, which is absolutely such a rich way to go about it. I mean, that's really kind of pretty courageous, actually, because in our culture, we say, what, you know, something twice, forget it. But we all know how children love to hear the same book over and over and over.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they absolutely want that same story over and over and over again.
And they to give these children, as you described, that process of allowing the story to come to life through within them, so that at that final point, they are embodying the story, enacting the story, experiencing the story in three dimensions. And the learning that comes from that is just, I'm not even sure, you know, what standards would measure that. It's so powerful.
And it can sometimes takes years, you know, before it comes back out and before you see it. So like you say, it's not really measurable, especially not immediately. But it's certainly, I'm seeing a lot of it now with my 10-year-old when he's recalling stories that he was told in kindergarten. So they do live on for a really long time, and it is a gift. And for those of us who aren't in a Waldorf classroom and don't have that experience, there's so many ways that we can share story on an ongoing basis, like you were talking about, really making it part of our family tradition to tell story and to appreciate story. So what about taking, how does this change up through the years? I know that your children are now grown, almost being married, one of them, and then a young teenager, the other one. And you recently shared that you had taken your daughter to see the teen monologues at the Little Theater. And so I would love to hear that, because we're talking a lot about how it is for the young child, but how does this move with us? How does this idea of story like move up through the ages, and not even through teens, but even on up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's wonderful if you're in a position to be able to start with your young child, your toddler, or even your primary student. It's just an excellent place to begin, but it's certainly, if your child is older than that, there's definitely many, many ways that you could begin integrating story as your part of your peaceful parenting practices. So just to touch on, yes, with the teen monologues, there's a local group who, over the last 13 years, they've created monologues written by teens and performed by teens. And Julia and I went to see that, and she's 13. And it was an incredibly powerful way for us to have conversation about the various issues that teens, you know, deal with on a day-to-day basis. She was definitely very enriched by it, and we had a wonderful conversation afterwards. Conversation that truly is conversation where I'm listening a lot to what her feelings are and her thoughts are, and saying yes and as a response to those. Particularly with teens, we can tend to become a little bit afraid that exploration is going to lead to, you know, serious consequences. But, you know, it's a tightrope walk at that point. You really, in my experience, having a 27-year-old also, the most important thing was to maintain that yes and perspective in conversation with them. And then another cool thing that you can do with children who are maybe past primary grade levels is find out what kind of books they're reading. I obviously already know. Perhaps read the story yourself as they are going along through it, or read it out loud to them if you are you know, have the time and space to do that. And then ask, hey, how is that character doing? What are they facing in this part of the book you're reading now? And let them tell you what the character's facing and what the struggle is. And, you know, well, gosh, how does that feel to you? And let them tell you. And really, at that point, my strategy is never to offer a tactic or a remedy. It's really for me to give my child the opportunity to strengthen their exploration skills in these ideas, and again, learn where is my child with this particular situation, and you know, how can I support them in becoming stronger?
It's wonderful. So the larger body of my work with families is really about cultivating emotional intelligence, which is one of the greatest predictors of a happy, successful, fulfilling life, way above high IQ and all the other things that we place a lot of importance on. Having a high level of emotional intelligence really sets us up for success in life. And so not only are we in the framework of story, be it oral storytelling or be it theater storytelling or be it, like you're saying, simply reading books together and taking the time to pause and kind of inquire deeper, about those characters. So not only are we building that rich foundation and understanding and language around our values, but we're really building emotional intelligence, which is a beautiful thing. So I'm
so
very
true.
Appreciative. Yeah, I really appreciate that element of it.
Oh, my gosh. Because, I mean, the beautiful part of the story is that when we hear story, we feel the story. You know,
yeah.
we get the same physical responses. I mean, we've all been in that movie where our palms are sweating and we're thinking, oh, come on, it's just a movie. But, you know, our brains are wired
yep.
to respond that way to story.
Absolutely.
It's a very powerful tool.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. So, Zet, do you have some ways for us to begin storytelling if we're interested in taking it beyond the storybook and into cultivating our own tradition of storytelling in the oral sense? Can you give us a few tips for how we might start if that's something that we've never done before?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the first thing most of us feel is self-conscious, or mm-hmm. I'm going to be look silly, or I'm going to make mistakes. And that's
yeah.
you know, such a natural feeling to have.
Yeah.
I always encourage people when I'm coaching them to become storytellers to really spend a lot of time with the idea that if you're going to do something well, you have to first be willing to do it badly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not culturally typically the way we're taught, but that's another gift of storytelling. You know, when you engage in it and when you cultivate that in your children, you give yourself and them a chance to do something poorly first with a sense of lightheartedness and acceptance. I always also tell them that the version of the story that comes out at that moment is the perfect version. You can give yourself
yeah.
permission to know that right now, that is the best version of that story.
Yeah.
And to say, okay, well, where were the holes in that one that I want to fill next time I tell the story?
Yeah.
And to go kind of go with that. But I really do encourage people who, like, if it's really too intimidating, I say, you know, get your favorite picture book if it's a young
mm-hmm.
child
mm-hmm.
or your favorite novel if it's an older child. Get that favorite book. And particularly, of course, I think with the younger children, we're probably a little more comfortable, you know, just becoming playful with it. Let your voice have emotion, you know.
Mm.
Maybe you even want to have a different voice for each character if you're so inclined. Creating different voices really isn't, like, necessary. It's not even the apex of storytelling. It's more about are you emotionally connecting with the story, and are you sharing that emotional connection in the way
yeah.
that you're sharing the story?
Yeah.
And as you say, that's that beautiful way of modeling emotional intelligence, I think,
mm-hmm.
with the kids. So spend time with the books with your child or whoever it is you want to share storytelling with, because
mm-hmm.
that's going to be a really good, that's your, you know, that's your core work out there. That's your doing your push-ups and your sit-ups kind of thing. That's going to let you become a little more relaxed with the idea of actually putting down a book and telling a story. And then
yeah.
another technique that I like to encourage is, you know, pick a traditional tale. Everybody knows Rumpelstiltskin, or most everybody. Everybody knows the Three Bears. You know, everybody
mm-hmm.
knows Goldilocks
right.
and the Three Bears. So take that story and change it up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Goldilocks and the Three Turtles. You know, I don't know.
It
can be any crazy direction you want to go.
Right.
Yeah, so feel free to kind of take that story and warp it a little bit. I have a favorite Jewish folktale that I tell. It's called It Could Always Be Worse, and it involves a number of different animals. And in this case, in the story, it's they're farm animals. But I have taken that story and have created, sometimes it'll be a zoo, and the kids
mm-hmm.
all get to be zoo animals, and I get them making the noises of the animals, whether it's at the farm or at the zoo. And that gives kids another really fun way to engage. It's silly, it's fun, and it also, I think, helps you as a storyteller. If you're an emerging storyteller, it can help you really relax with that whole process, because once you start getting silly, you're on the right track.
Great, yes.
Yeah, and then another great way to do it is to tell the kids the story of how they came to be in your life, whether it was through birth or adoption. They love those stories. You know the story really by heart, so you won't have any trouble telling that. Yeah. And then there are some really great tools out there. Something called Story Cubes is a game format that helps you with your kids just kind of create stories and get your imagination moving. Or this set of cards called Tell Me a Story. There's quite a few options out there now that really can make it fun. But, so any of those tools that really appeals is probably the best one for you.
Great. We've been having a blast at home with the Story Cubes. They showed up sometime around the holidays. I'm not sure who they came from, but they've been a lot of fun. And actually, the kids keep bringing them into bed at night. And so we've been making up our own stories. And then also reading. So our story time at night is very long, but
I'm
really enjoying those. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And it did start out, even with the story cubes, it started out fairly awkward. How do we put this piece and this piece together? And but it's become more and more and more fun the more we play with it. So I love that you brought that up. Thanks.
Yes, it's definitely, it's a practice. Like, probably all the types of things that you talk about in setting limits peacefully. You want to be kind to yourself initially. And I think, too, for me, my experience, the more I've been able to be compassionate and kind toward myself, strengthens my ability to be compassionate and kind with my children in stressful moments, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So true. For sure. Yeah, and the way that we really weave this storytelling piece back into the setting limits is, like I touched on in the beginning, is just creating a family culture. And then and through exploring these story topics, we can find the stories that do bring out our own unique values and really highlight those in a way. And so having a conversation around it rather than putting that end cap on it, like we were talking about earlier, you know, making sure that we leave the conversation open and we allow the story to live in their imagination, and also finding a way that we can share what we see in that we see the kindness between characters in that story, but not making it entirely about that. So the way we're using the story is just to develop more language and develop even richer soil. And I find that we lay down this foundation and then we have a lot to touch back on when we need to. So when there's a time when we really need to set a limit and it's based on a family value of kindness, or anything else, I'm just using that as the example today, then we've already really spent the time to develop this understanding amongst family members. And we have that story already living in our hearts and our imaginations, and probably not just one story, but many stories.
Absolutely. And I would say, too, the stories where the characters are demonstrating perhaps the opposite of our family value are almost more powerful.
Yep.
Because children are very wise, and it's very easy for them to spot how someone sort of went on the wrong path.
Yep.
And those stories can be really effective. And often, later on, all I have to do is say, gosh, you know, this reminds me of that story, da-da.
Yep.
And my child will say, that's right. And instantly, we've had an entire conversation. Because we've said, oh, yeah, that's the story. Oh, yeah. And because we have that story in our environment, our family environment, in our vernacular, we don't really even have to discuss it much. The metaphor is such a nice shorthand, you know. It's just like a rich nugget that enables you to communicate much more effectively. So, and I would just encourage, if people haven't checked back in with the folk tales of or, you know, whatever your heritage is, also there are many, many folk tales from all around the world and some wonderful collections out there. And it's an amazing, rich reservoir of stories, many of which have been really distilled through the ages, so that the wisdom of it, the power of it, the humanness of it is much clearer than in contemporary writing particularly.
Yeah, I would agree. Thank you for that. Right. So, Zet, can you give us, in kind of wrapping up here, can you give us some ways that we can stay in touch with you? And I know you also had mentioned having a blog post that might be helpful to families around who are really looking for specific ways of telling stories. So I wonder if you want to share the address of that blog post and then share other ways that we can get into contact with you.
That's great. Yeah, I'd love to. The blog post is on my website, which is zetharbor.com. That's ZETTEHARBOUR.com. And the post itself is called 5 Ways to Tell Stories to Your Kids. And that really is focused on the younger age group. So it's a good jumping off point for folks who have kids in the younger age group. Also on the website, you can find information about the Peace Love Story Fest, or you can go to peacelovestoryfest.com to get involved with that or learn more information. And on both of those sites, there is there's a way to actually send your contact information through to me if you want to be on the list to get new blog posts about storytelling or stories or new information about storytelling-related events.
Fantastic. And just for those of us who are local to the Central Coast of California here, can you share with us when the next Peace Love Story Fest is coming up? Because it's fairly soon.
It is. It's Saturday, May 16th. It's at 4 p.m. Yeah, it starts at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, goes to 7. We've got quite a bit of family and community fun planned. It's going to start with, of course, some food and some community gathering, a community story circle where people can share a story, whether it's a family story or a favorite folktale, or even a song. And then we have our performers lined up. Shadowlands is the musical group. And we have Robin Saxer, who's bilingual story and song. And then Barbara Russell, who shares story as trained by a more indigenous sort of structure around storytelling. And Alex Milechev, who's going to kind of bring us more of a Russian feel to her stories. And then I'll be telling stories as well. And so we're going to have food, drink, and fun, and lots of good memories will come from it. So,
fantastic. And is that a family event so children can come as well?
It is. It's a family event. All ages are welcome. Tickets are $10. It is outdoors, so I do encourage you to bring your beach chairs and blankets if you like. And depending on what the weather's like on May 16th, if you want to wrap up.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I can't wait. I'm going to be there.
Great.
On my calendar. Yay. Thank you, Zet, so much for having this conversation with me today and for being willing to share your wisdom around story with everybody in this wonderful course. So I think that it's really added a lot, and it's really going to help everybody dive into creating that richness in their family. So I'm so, so grateful for you and for this
Thank
time
you.
Together today.
Yeah. This was really, really wonderful. I totally, thoroughly enjoyed it and love to talk story with you anytime.
Great, great. That's perfect. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Mariah. You too.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.